Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, and this is the Fifth Tuesday special edition, and starring Mitchell Spean. Mitchell, nice seeing you since this morning.
Good morning to you, too.
No, it's actually good afternoon.
I know the morning went well, but we're still working on the afternoon, though.
That's right. In the evening, how will the evening go?
That's exactly right. We don't know.
All right. That's good. But if we put it in our mindset as it will be magnificent, then there is a chance it can be magnificent.
No, it will be.
And speaking of magnificence, I am really excited to have three sponsors of the show, actually four, because you, Mitchell Spean, I always think of Top Gun when I say Mitchell. But that's Pete Mitchell, I think. Was that Pete Mitchell?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, how's Kelly McGillis, by the way?
Not my type.
Oh, well, good. That leaves more for me. All right. So what we got here is three great sponsors. And, Mitch, this is your brainchild to put sponsors together on these fifth Mondays and Tuesdays of the month. That doesn't happen every month, but maybe, what, every three, 4 months, I guess.
Right. It happens about four times a year, just so that they can get that 39th week in.
Yeah, that's
in the quarter.
Well, I'll tell you, we have a great cast today, a great in-studio guest, because where else can you get an IT professional, an attorney, financial planner, and throw two CPAs in for the mix all in one room at one time? It doesn't happen. I don't think it's ever happened.
Maybe we ought to have people call in and ask some questions.
I think so, too. I'm going to introduce our great cast of in-studio guests right now, and then we'll give out the phone number. But to my left is the star of Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crisis, Larry Moskow, financial planner. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. Glad to be here.
It's great because your show is fantastic. Let's see. It's the fourth Tuesday between 2 and 3.
That is correct.
That is great. And over to Larry's left is none other than super IT guy, we'll call him, like Superman, Al Fulton, NetOne Services. Al, how are you?
Oh, great. I'm glad to be here. Thanks, Dave.
Oh, you're welcome. And, of course, you're the first, the fourth, when is your show?
Fourth Monday.
Fourth Monday. Wow, time flies. We just had your show then.
Yeah, just a week ago.
It was a good one, too. Anyway, Al Fulton. And, of course, someone I have known forever. And truly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, the greatest attorney I have ever met. And, Jim, you know that. I say it every show. Jim Hyten, right now, Hyten Lewis. Jim, how are you?
Thank you. Good. Very good.
This is great. It's been a little while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah, Damien's been on. He's on the sports show. Great guy.
Yeah, Damien is a real sports guy.
Oh, yeah. He's cool. But this is great to have you back in studio. And, of course, Mitchell Spean, super CPA over there across from me. Say hi again.
Hi again.
All right. Well, not quite what I was expecting. However,
I'm just following instructions.
I know. All right. Put your wallet on the table. Turn around. Okay. Anyway, wait, you need an attorney. Oh, you got one. Okay. And a financial planner I'll need because of all that money.
There you go.
And I'll have to lock it away, IT security. So we're going to talk about mid-year planning. And like I said, CPAs are in the house, attorney, financial planner, IT guy. If you want to call in, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. If something you notice that you want to talk about, feel free to call in mid-year planning. So, Mitch, what do you have in mind?
Well, we've hit, obviously, the middle of the year, and a lot of people tend to wait to do planning until the end of the year. And my goal is to get people to start thinking about these things earlier in the year. When are you going to make the big purchases? When are you going to start putting away the monies for your retirement plans? When are you going to be doing some of these, looking at your expenses and seeing what you can do now rather than waiting until the October, November, December, when it becomes a a massive crisis, and we want to avoid the crisis, and the way to do that is to do it early.
And I was going to mention, not only do it early, but just do it. Because as you guys know, maybe we'll start off that way, is that most people just don't do it any time of the year. Even at year end, why don't we go around the table, talk about that? Because that's my experience. I think people don't understand planning. They don't know where to go for planning. They think their planning is maybe a fleeting thought about what to eat for breakfast. That's what I think. But let's start with Jim Hyten, because you are a planner. There's no doubt that you have clients that you strategically do planning with, whether it's a transaction or more global, like strategic planning for a business.
Well, like Mitchell says, that usually what we're trying to do is to get clients to look at it before the end of the year, and usually substantially before the end of the year, because a lot of times the first meeting raises more questions than it has answers. And so what we're trying to do is get them in the door, talk about, like Mitchell says, are you going to make a big purchase this year? Are you going to start a retirement plan? What are you going to do? And then they usually have a lot of questions, and so we have to go find answers to those questions, consulting with a financial advisor and the CPA, and then come back and have another meeting to make the final decision. So if you wait till November and December to do that, it's just really a fire drill. You know, it's really tough to get it done.
Yeah, I agree. I think planning should be, really thought about all through the year, and and monitor your progress towards the planning too. So, but like most people, they wait till the last moment, like in college where you took your college exams, you cram for the exams, but it doesn't really quite work if the transaction takes 30 to 60 days, close an escrow. If you can't do it before the end of the year, it may not.
Right.
Matter.
There are also deadlines that are there. Certain types of plans have to be set up before the end of the year. Some of them are even earlier. Larry, there's some that are really early. I think the simple IRAs are like in October.
Yeah, by October. That's right.
So there are certain, when you're looking at planning for something like that, you have to, if you're doing it in November, you're already late.
Yeah, there's no question about it. But, what I think we'll do is go global and then pare down specifically. But the concept of planning, from your perspective, Larry, it's got to be huge, because if you don't get things on paper, and I think planning helps you focus on what's possible, what you haven't thought about, going to a professional like yourself, a financial planner, so people can say, wow, I didn't know I could do that. Mm. And then there are time deadlines. Talk about planning from your perspective.
Well, Dave, in my mind, planning is in a unique domain right now as a concept and as a wise thing to do. And I say that because I don't think any of us who in this room or anywhere have ever been through where we are now. It's always been a good idea and a prudent idea and wise and smart to plan ahead, do your homework, lay things out. Many of us are procrastinators and we end up waiting. And that's been an ongoing phenomenon of humans for a long time. But I've thought about this issue of why, especially now, I see less planning going on. I've come to the conclusion, Dave, that we're in what I'm going to call an Apollo 13 state of affairs.
Mm.
What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, if you remember the story of Apollo 13, that was a mission to get something done, kind of like planning is. And what happened? We sent those guys up, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong. There was no rule book for it. There was no rule book that says, well, if this, then that, and if this, then that. And so what happened then? Things that never should have went wrong did go wrong. What they did was they came in, and I remember the movie especially, that Gene Cernan mindset of saying, guys, we're in uncharted territory. We've got to get this square peg into this round hole using nothing but this. And what I mean by that is there they were overtaken with a unified spirit of action, and failure was not an option. Remember that line?
I do remember that.
Failure is not an option. And I think some of that mindset, some of that energy needs to be infused into every one of us right now, because there is almost a sense of paralysis that I see when I just look out at the world at large, our country, a sense of everything's changing. You can't count on anybody. You can't count on anything. What are taxes going to do? I don't know. They're this year, but they might go back to this way next year, or they may go some other way. Markets have been extremely volatile. Where are their returns? Where are their things to do? So I guess the upshot of my comments about planning is, first, adopt that Apollo 13 mindset. Failure is not an option. We may not have all the answers, but if we can unify in spirit and our energy, we've got to come together. We've got to just push through it, knuckle down, do the best planning we can do under the circumstances with what we have to work with. And so this issue of planning is more than just time-sensitive dates and so on. It's about capturing a spirit of action and a purposefulness to what we're doing, and say, I don't have all the answers, no one does, but I'm in my little world, I'm going to take these items, and I am going to do everything I can to make these happen.
That totally makes sense. I love how
you
said that.
You're starting with an end goal.
A peace of mind goal, a focus. That's right. That's right.
Now, Al, if someone doesn't plan properly in the IT world, it could be disaster. And one specific thing I know of that makes me paranoid is if you don't have a backup system like I have now with you.
True.
Right? Yeah. If you don't plan for that, guess what? You could be out of business very quickly.
That's so true.
So talk a little bit about that. And from the IT perspective, is that a backup plan, and probably other things that people may need to know about?
Yeah, when you're planning, it could also be for future purchases of equipment.
Yeah.
And that type of planning, as well as making sure that the data is secure.
And future relationships with a guy named Al Fulton.
Yes, true. Yeah, good point. Good point. It starts with planning. Like you said, there's a backup disaster recovery. There's also just plain disaster recovery planning. So you don't really plan for the disaster. You plan to prevent the disaster first. And if it happens, then you go into your if-then. If the server is not available, where can you move your data? Do you have your data to move? So you dissect a scenario with the computer. Some data is up in the cloud. There's the cloud computing. There's web servers, email servers, SQL database, where all the contact relation management, CRM software is kept, everything may be at the home office where everything is stored. In those cases, you want to make some redundancy backup. You'll back up your data to a physical device other than a server. You can make a backup to a local PC, a laptop, or even just a external USB hard drive. If it's highly critical data that you need immediate access to, there are also the small thumb drives that can hold quite a bit of information, and maybe an officer of the company would want to back that up and have that in his possession, or transport it over to another office, safety deposit box at a bank or something. So in case the entire building is razed, they can go, retrieve that data from somewhere. Now, online backup is a nice feature because you can then go to anywhere else that has internet and retrieve that data, download it onto another computer, and then access it again. But online solutions, like online hosted solutions, it's not as critical, meaning they have redundancy. Their data is stored in multiple sites around the U.S. So when one data center is knocked out, they back up. That's their disaster recovery. They back up snapshots to another location, so the user wouldn't notice that the hurricane took out a data center down in Florida or Gulf Coast. The data, they just log in and they access the data up here in Scottsdale, Arizona.
But if you watch CNN, Anderson Cooper, you would notice that data center is probably knocked out by a hurricane because he's the guy that wears his little raincoat right there in the middle of a hurricane. Ever see him out there?
Yes.
It's the funniest thing. I go, you got to be kidding. Most people are evacuating. He's going on the beach watching the tidal waves come in. Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, I think we're going to talk about how to build a team, because planning, I don't think, is as valuable unless you know an attorney, a financial planner, IT guy, CPAs, because they all participate. What do you look for in a team? How do you find that great team member? We'll talk about that when we come back. And, of course, this is the Fifth Tuesday special edition of Breakthrough Thinking. We'll be right back.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Fifth Tuesday special edition starring Mitchell Spean from Beerbaum and Spean, great CPAs. We also have in studio Larry Moscat. Of course, his show is Money Management, Wounded Hearts, and Family Crisis, RIIA, Retirement Income and Inheritance Advisors, LLC. And by the way, Larry has, before I get to Al and Jim, Larry has a very unique background being in psychology in his first early years in his career, and now financial planning. great combination, I think, and really, really phenomenal. Al Fulton, Net One Services, is in the house. Of course, Breakthrough Networking is his show. Jim Hyten, right now, or Hyten and Lewis, great, great law firm. And what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about how do you build a team. Clearly, you need an attorney, financial planner, IT, CPAs. I think this day and age, you also need coaches if you can find a great business coach. I think that would also be important.
And so, one last one that I would probably add would be a good banker.
Yeah, I think a good banker. What do you think, Jim?
Yes, I'd say so, yes.
Good banker. Yeah, that would make sense. I would agree. So everyone should have a team no matter how small, how big. I mean, I think everyone can have a team, and they should have a team. Now, let's start with Larry. And Larry, why don't you talk about what should people look for when they're choosing a financial planner? What are some of the qualities, the characteristics? How do you tell a good financial planner from not so much?
Well, I guess there's objective and subjective measurements for that. Some of the more objective ones, Dave, would be certification as a financial planner, a CFP. I'm biased. I am one. So I know what that training was about, and it was quite grueling, if I'll say so myself, and it's only gotten more so. So I think something that shows a commitment to the profession, a designation. There are other valuable designations with that are related to the services and speak to the quality and at least training of people that do financial planning. I think the CFP is probably the best known one of those. There's time in service. You know, how long you been doing this? And it's just a fact that the longer you participate in a profession, the more you've been down the road. You have moved down the road through many different situations, and have navigated many economies. So just some time in service. So some designations, some time in service, clean record. There are many ways to check up on planners, brokers, insurance people, and the like. Check them out. See if they have complaints. See what others may have had to say about this individual. And those are some of the objective criteria. The subjective criteria, I would say, is every bit as important, and maybe even more important for some people. Sometimes your gut is just right on. If you get the right feeling, it feels right, it looks right, it smells right, it seems right, it might be right because of that. So I would say tend to trust your gut. Back to my Apollo 13 scenario, we never had a Bernie Madoff that we knew about amongst us. And the very presence of someone so high up in the profession, so well known, so much tenure in their position, to have committed what he committed is absolutely unthinkable. So people are afraid of being fooled. Nevertheless, I still say trusting your gut is not a bad option. And if you get the feeling, I wonder if I'm really dealing with a snake oil guy or is this a real guy? If you're asking the question, it might not be your guy. So I would say look to those objective measurements of advanced training, degrees, time in service, background checks, and then the feeling in your gut. And if all those stars are lining up, Dave, and it feels good, you feel. I tell my clients there are really three ingredients that are necessary to do business with me. They must feel that I possess ability and integrity. And lastly, we must share a positive chemistry. And if those three criteria are present, the chances are good that we'll get off to a good start and have good results.
I like it. That makes a lot of sense. So a lot of people just look at bedside manner. That's not good enough, I don't think. I think you really have to find out how credible they are, sophisticated, reliable, responsible. Mm-hmm. Al? What makes a good IT guy? And I know how you could spell it. You remember how you spell relief?
Yeah.
R Olaids. How do you spell good IT guy? A-L.
Thanks. No, relief would be not what you spelled, but a leave. The headaches, relieving the headaches, not the stomach ache.
Yeah, exactly.
Very similar. The experience in the field. Now, very much like attorneys, there are multiple types of law that are studied. There's criminal. There's civil. I think there's 23.
Probably more now.
Same thing with IT. There's hardware techs. There's software. There's software developers, which they write software. There are troubleshooters. There are entry-level techs that can troubleshoot over the phone. So just because someone has a number of years in IT, you have to ask in what level of experience, and then in what type of capacity, enterprise level, home, residential, small business, and ask questions of the individual. The number of years of experience in that key field is important. Like myself, I've been in IT 30 years, but I've studied hardware, optical media, jukeboxes, digital programming. I mean, I have a wide range of experience over those 30 years. So I won't say I'm a jack of all trades. There are things that I do very well, and I stick to those things, even though I have experience in the other areas. That lends to what I do. So if you're looking for someone that you want to repair hardware or implement new hardware, a software programmer is not going to, I don't think it's the right mix, even though they have 10 years of experience in supposedly IT. So next would be the way the person, they come across. If they don't explain what they're doing, or they're not communicative, they're secretive, or you just don't get a good feeling about what they're doing, that's a good reason just to say no. Just continue that utilizing that person, or look for someone that's more compatible. That's very important in IT. You got to feel comfortable with them in order to communicate what your needs are, what the problems are, to get them resolved. That communication has to be there, so they have to be communicative. A couple other areas would be their ability, their speed, as in you want someone who is, sharp, tentative to and punctual. They get there, they take care of it, they take care of it quickly. I look for those types of things when I inspect what I expect of individuals. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other things that slip my memory at the moment that we go through and check their background check. It's always good. Make sure they don't have any legal skeletons in the closet, whether personal credit or business, prior businesses that they've owned and failed and, they need to disclose that. So disclosure is good as well.
Well, that makes sense. And, of course, what I can say, no doubt your response time is phenomenal. I think that's a little unusual in the IT industry, and I really compliment you on that.
Oh, it's like, thank you, Dave.
Very, like super quick.
Thank you.
It's incredibly quick. It's I'll give stories later on how he has saved me 3 times. Okay, Jim, and, of course, I've known you so long, and if there is a poster child for, or I shouldn't say child, adult, but of what a great attorney is, it would be you.
Well, thank you.
There's no question. And really all your attorneys, I pretty much know all of them. I think every single one prior to expansion, I think, have been on the show, and they're all amazing. And what are some of the qualities? I mean, what do you look for in an attorney? There's so many attorneys, there's so many CPAs, and how do you know?
Well, I think that a lot of the things that we've been talking about here are the same things that you look for in attorneys. You look for, their credentials. Even the state bar now is starting to certify different people in various areas, like be it criminal defense law, bankruptcy, tax law, things like that. So, that's helpful, but also, just their experience, how long they've been at it. I've been at it over 30 years now. I don't want to, I just stopped it at over 30 years. And, you gain a certain amount of wisdom from that because you see a lot of things. And one thing that I would mention, and I always remember having this conversation with Mitchell, was that you know, I try to tell clients when we start the relationship is that one thing they will get from me is some pretty brutal honesty about things. And like, you know, I've had to, in the past few months where we had a client working on a transaction, I finally had to tell them I thought the transaction was a disaster waiting to happen. Wow. I just couldn't recommend they go through with it because the terms weren't good, the price wasn't good, nothing about it was good. I was just band-aiding a transaction together. And I remember talking with Mitchell about, you know, having those kind of conversations. And I think for a client, that's important to have somebody you trust well enough that'll look you in the eye and say, you know, you're on the wrong road here. You need to stop or change course. And that's
well, I've had those kind of conversations with clients, and I've actually, in addition to that, followed out, memorialized it with a letter explaining to them again, hey, these are the pitfalls you're going to be looking at. And then it's up to them whether they want to continue. It's always their decision, but they're going to go in with their eyes open.
Right.
And that's the important part. You know, just understand and make sure that they understand.
And I do think that's an important part of what an advisor does is to have a good enough relationship that you can say, this just doesn't look right, and I think you've got something that's not going well for you here.
You know, that makes sense. And you have to have a lot of confidence to do that and a lot of faith in your own ability as well as the relationship because, after all, if you see someone going on the off-ramp on the freeway going upward, you know it's not going to be a pretty sight. And there are some professionals, I suspect, out there will just do mechanically in their profession, never looking at the bigger picture like, wait a minute, yeah, legally we could put this together or from a tax standpoint or whatever. But this, like you said, Jeff, I mean, this is like not going to happen. And just imagine how angry they could possibly be at you saying, well, how come you didn't let us know?
Yeah, you'd never want to be in the position after it's done to say, well, I could have told you that that wasn't going to work because they're never going to want to hear that.
That'd be horrible.
You want to tell them before. And it's and that's why the team basis is so important. I worked on a transaction here recently where I made as many calls to the client's CPA as I did to the client because it was so tax-driven, and I wanted to make absolutely sure we're doing everything right documentation-wise. And that's why the team is really important to be able to look at that and, you know, make sure you're doing it right because, you know, you don't want to do it and then close it. And then I, you know, send it over to Mitchell, and he goes, what did you do?
Yeah, that's you're right. The team is so, so important. So any other qualities that you can think of that people should know when they select an attorney?
Well, as I say, I think they have to look. They can look at the bar and find out if there's been any complaints and things like that. A lot of times we get referrals by word of mouth. I mean, so really it's somebody who knew us that had a good experience that they come in and we talk to them. And I like Larry, I think a lot of it is make sure you're comfortable with the attorney, that you trust them, that, you know, you can have those really honest conversations about things and not feel, you know, uncomfortable or, you know, that there's no kind of attacking going on. Everybody is just on the same page trying to make sure that the client's getting the best deal.
Dave, Jim makes some very good points, and we're talking about selection of advisors, and it's my feeling, and it's been my experience in practice, that nobody really, first of all, nobody ever comes into my office that's comfortable. That's everyone is there in discomfort, whether it's felt or not, or expressed or not. Everyone is there. And in order to move past that, you must have a trusting relationship with this prospective advisor. How do you develop trust? Well, trust grows from the soil of relationship. And so just interacting and allowing a potential client to see your candor, as Jim mentioned, just brutally honest, whether your situation looks good or not, just brutal honesty, incredible candor, openness about, I mean, to a reasonable degree about yourself and your experiences in your practice. Those are the kinds of things that begin to build a connection or a relationship, and it's out of that that trust forms and a connection is actually made. So just just being in the presence and engaging someone will give you a sense of whether a relationship might be possible. And if a relationship feels possible, it's a logical leap to think or at least hope that trust would grow from that. So Jim just made some good points about that. And we were talking about being parties to transactions. I know in my business, by law, I function as a fiduciary. I function as a fiduciary because I'm a board-certified financial planner. I function as a fiduciary because of my registered investment advisor status. And we can't be party to things that will not be in a client's best interest. And as Jim was talking about brutal candor and honesty, I've thought about situations where I've, because of that, even though there might have been some income opportunities for me to engage with this client, I had to respectfully say no.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do that. And that's because it was not in their best interest, what they were trying to do. And I can't put my name to that. I can't do it. Because at the end of the day, every single one of us in here have to be held accountable for what we recommend and what we implement for clients. And if we're all acting in a fiduciary capacity, there are just some times that we can't do what that client wants to do. And if we're going to be real fiduciaries, we have to decline.
And that's called integrity, and everyone in this room has that. Now, Mitch, CPA, the qualities of a great CPA, and what would you say people, what should people ask when they interview a CPA?
Well, I think they need to get to know the person individually. I think the best start is when you get a referral, because you've already started with one relationship, starting a second relationship. So if you've, what you have to do is really take the current crop of clients and really treat them right. That's where it starts. And then as you get these referrals or new clients, you can feel comfortable if they want to talk to somebody about things so that they can get that level of comfort. As far as the qualifications, obviously, I've always felt that just about anybody can do a tax return. I mean, the technical aspects of being a CPA are pretty prevalent out there. But what the difference is taking it that next step, going beyond just the numbers, taking a proactive approach and kind of looking forward. And if, as you see things, don't just leave it at the numbers, make recommendations, do the planning from what you've seen, and move forward with things like that. And so that's where I start. You know, you start with the referral. You know if they've got the CPA, they've gone through the education. The education part's straightforward. And talk to people.
You know, I would, I'll just put my two cents in here from the CPA perspective, and I think it'll hit everyone here, but one thing I would recommend potential clients to ask the CPA is describe an act of integrity that you had in the past. Now, if they have a blank look, then say, thank you very much, I'm moving on to Mitchell Spink. No, but the thing is really, I think...
Or Dave Isaac.
Yeah, the thing is so many... You know, as a former auditor, and Mitch, you were a former auditor as well.
Yes.
I've done probably about 1,000 audits for the government. I think you probably did a lot more. I think you were there longer.
I was there about 8 years.
Yeah. So, but the thing is that there's so many, in all professions, you know, they're questionable integrity. And I think that's a good question, an act of integrity, see what they say. And Larry, you hit it on the head. I mean, you decline, you resign immediately on clients, and I know all you do the same thing. The other thing is to ask, what's the most challenging work you've ever had? You know, see what their level of sophistication is, and also their style. Are they conservative, meaning they work within the Internal Revenue Code, or are they liberal and they cross the line? Oh, my gosh, you never want to hear that. But if they are, run for the hills. Crossing the line is a no-no and a no-no, and I can say it all day long. And also, Do they have 20 years of experience, or do they have 20 years of 1 year of experience? Think about that. That's really important, because is your CPA evolving, growing, learning more stuff? Are they just recording historical data, or do they do that plus they know the success path of the future? And I think that is so critical for all of us to plan how people can be successful and interpret data from the past, but also plan the future. And that's what the show is about, is significant planning. So these are things I would add. But I do think we have the A-team here today. Everyone here is phenomenal. I'm going to give the phone number if you want to talk to an attorney, IT guy, financial planner, or a pair of CPAs. That's like poker, a pair of... What is that? Oh, a pair. That's what it's called. 602-296-3632. 602-296-3632. Please call in. Why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some specifics, you know, really the guts of planning. What are some of the areas, for example, tax planning, transactional type analysis, strategic planning, financial planning, disaster planning, some real specifics, and we'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
In today's environment, short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy seem to be the norm and not the exception. These events can be devastating emotionally as well as financially. But just when you thought it was over, you might start to wonder about the tax consequences of short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy. Tax law can be very complex, and it would be critical to understand the tax laws surrounding your situation. Call Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor, at 602-625-3074, 602-625-3074, to discuss your situation. He looks forward to talking with you.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac alongside Mr. Mitchell Spien, Bierbaum and Spien. And Mitchell, we have a great set of guests. We've been talking about the value of planning. And, of course, we have Jim Hyten right now, or Hyten and Lewis here, a great attorney talking about planning. We have Al Fulton, Net One Services, and, of course, Larry Mascout, RIIA, Retirement Income and Inheritance Advisors, LLC, financial planner, in the house. And where do you get all these people in one sitting? I mean, really, if I was me, I would call in. But I am me. I don't have to call in because I'm here live. But call in at 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632, and ask the question. I mean, right? Financial planning, IT, attorney, CPA. Now, let's start. Let's talk a little bit about a little bit more specifics. And how about something I think is on the minds of everyone, especially with economy, especially with issues of emotional security, financial security, is retirement planning. So we'll just throw that up in the air for discussion. Larry, why don't we start with you, retirement planning. I'll just leave it general, and you could just start talking, and everyone can just chime in. I know we may have some areas, sure. Legal areas, tax areas that we may chime in on.
Well, okay. Dave, there are basically strategies and there are tactics. Strategies is the thinking behind what we do. The tactics are the use of the correct tools and whatever tactics we're going to take to accomplish some goals. But I think many consumers might be who've not worked with a planner or who have not worked with a planner doing things maybe the way I think they should be done. They think you come in and guys can say buy XYZ and buy ABC and that'll get you where you want to go. And it's not that way at all. First of all, ABC and XYZ are tactical moves. They're not strategic. And just in the way of example, when I work with clients in retirement planning, this is one thread of thinking that I use with my clients. Excuse me. I generally tell them that for the most part, there are really three ways to program retirement income, and those methods, very generally, are capital depletion, capital retention, or some hybrid of those two. Let me translate that into plain words. Capital retention means, in retirement, I want to live exclusively off my earnings because I have an intended use for my money when I'm gone, and therefore I don't want to touch my principal. I simply want to live on the earnings. And so we then engage in tactical moves that will plan towards that objective. They may want to leave money for kids. They may want to leave money for their charities. They may want to leave money wherever they to their pets or wherever it may be. That's a capital retention mindset, and that then translates into additional strategies and tactics. There's another way to look at retirement, and most people don't realize the opportunity this can bring. It's called capital depletion, where we program a retirement income stream over a period of time so that it gives them the money that they need and maybe even some more money than they need to cross over into money that they want and money that they would like. Maybe they have no kids. Maybe they have no charities. Maybe they just want to be that guy that dies with a dollar in his pocket. And what they can do is enjoy a lifetime of a very nice, generous income stream and really not worry about what is left. That's another strategic avenue we can go down. The hybrid is kind of a midpoint maybe between those two, where we systematically plan to spend off portions of our principal to give us more income than just earnings would provide and leave some income and strike up a middle ground. So those are the kinds of discussions we have in terms of planning. That's one aspect of planning before we ever get to buying ABC and XYZ, and because it's not just all about the money. It's about family. It's about transgenerational issues. It's about the legacy you might care to leave, and we take all of those things, objective points and subjective points, into account and combine them both. And once I get a sense of what their wishes are and their legacy, then we can begin to distill that down into a set of more precise strategies, ultimately evolving into a set of tactical moves to accomplish that. Everything is tied together.
That totally makes sense. And Jim, that's what you do also. I mean, from an estate planner point of view, right? So you still do a lot of estate planning. And,
right.
And so knowing one's criteria is probably a role that you're involved in. Like, what do you really want? You know, do you want to leave stuff to your kids? Or like Larry said, you want to deplete it, die with a dollar. That's interesting, too. So how do you go about all this?
Well, we sit down with a client. We try to find out what do they want to do with their estate. I mean, if a lot of times that people are going to, they know they're going to use part of their estate for retirement. And then the question is, who are they going to leave it to? And what I generally tell people, estate planning is a lot about who are you going to leave it to and when are you going to leave it to them? Because a lot of people have children that they want to leave, you know, what's left in trust. They want to make sure that it's protected. They don't want the child to waste the money, things like that. So we go through a lot of those kinds of questions with people to find out. Sometimes it turns out they want to leave it to charity, you know, or you know, we still have people that create their own private foundations, too. So it's a lot of different things that go on. One of the interesting things that's happening this year that is kind of an anomaly because of the fact that if at the end of the year the capital gains rate goes away, it's 15% now for long-term capital gains, and if that expires, it goes to what, like 28%, 30%?
I think it'll
20. Go up to 20.
20, yeah.
Yeah. So some people are looking at that and saying, you know, their retirement is their business. You know, that's really what they've worked their whole life developing. And gotcha. So the question is, do they sell it now or do they wait? You know, and I'm having some people who are making that decision this year because they look at it and they think, well, this is the lowest it's ever going to be.
Are we taking advantage of the gift tax rules that are in place now as part of that?
Yeah.
Where you can give up to, what is it, $5 million, a little bit more?
A little bit more than $5 million per person
and
lifetime.
And basically that gets it out of the estate.
Right. But, I mean, some folks, as I say, you know, you probably work with a lot of people, Larry, that have, you know, retirement plans and whether it be profit sharing or 401K. But as I say, I run into a lot of people that the business itself is their retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've always thought that when they got to a certain age, they would sell it, and that money would be their retirement. And as I say, I'm seeing more people start to ask that question this year.
Sure. I hear talk like that, Jim, and I see those things happening. Sometimes, though, I wonder if it isn't a case of the tax tail wagging the dog, as they say. I wish our listeners could see the chart that I have here. I have a chart of the top U.S. Historical top tax rates in the country since income taxes began in 1913. And while I've not counted the numbers, I do have this list showing in the majority of years, tax rates were way, way higher than they are right now, and even way higher than they're even programmed to go to if these laws sunset like we think they might. And we see back in World War II, the top income tax rate, this isn't capital gains, and certainly it's a complicated landscape, but we had top tax rates north of 90% in, I'm looking here at about about a dozen years. And I think we're somehow programmed or conditioned sometimes to just think that if tax rates change and go up even a little, we have to make quantum leaps towards changing our lives to accommodate that, when historically, even if they do go up next year, they'll still be below where they've been for the majority of years since the income tax rule or law was adopted back in 1913.
I suspect you go over that with your clients. I mean, to me, it would, like, what makes the most economic sense? But certainly the tax part is part of the equation, and the bigger transaction, that could make a difference, couldn't
it? Yeah, because you look at it, you know, you have somebody walk in, they're 63, 64 years old, they've built their business for the last 35 years, and they're going to sell it for somewhere north of $10 million of gain. That extra 5% means something.
So it's
a tough decision.
Yeah, and I know the tax rates have been ridiculously high, but I think it's all relative, too. I mean, it's been a while since it's been that high, and It just depends on, you're right, the person, the age, and does 50,000 extra mean, can it be a big deal? Well, it probably could be, right? I mean, yeah, it's possible. Sure. So, but all these are part of the equation when looking at it. Now, and Jim, do you work with like 401ks? And I mean, do you advise people there too?
No, we will help set up 401ks. We do, you know, if somebody has a custom plan that they need to do custom, we'll draft the plan for them, integrate with profit sharing, things like that. I mean, I think that's one of the best ways anybody can save for retirement is to have those plans. I mean, we always try to advise people to get those plans in early and start saving now as opposed to putting it off down the road.
Let me pose a question to you, Jim, and everyone. I basically agree with what you're saying, Jim, and there's a strong argument to think that way and to behave that way. What are your thoughts about this concept of tax rates as they are now, putting away pre-tax dollars? Might we see a situation in the future where, much like a farmer, he goes out and purchases his seeds on a tax-deductible basis and then pays income tax on the entire harvest at possibly much higher rates? I think there's at least an argument or at least a basis for discussion on other ways to save money that are by law, at least today, tax-free. Some of the vehicles that we have to accumulate and distribute money tax-free. As rates rise, those types of vehicles tend to get more and more attention, and they've kind of fallen a little bit away from being in the crosshairs of people's planning. I don't know. I think we may see rates going up in one form or another, and those may come back in as very, very meaningful options and alternatives to the quote-unquote qualified tax-deductible plan up front with fully taxable income on the tail end.
So are you talking about like maybe the value of investing in municipal bonds and stuff or you know,
maybe,
tax-free type stuff?
Things like life insurance. Life insurance for many years has been used as a way to accumulate funds tax-free and distribute them tax-free. And in the higher the tax environment, the more meaning a plan like that has. Might those rules change? It's Apollo 13. They might. They might change or they might not. But if we go forward with any sense of continuity and assume that maybe that part of the law won't change, life insurance has been a great way to accumulate funds and distribute them. In fact, it was so popular and so abused that back when was it, guys? Late 80s, early 90s, when the modified endowment contract came about, and I don't remember the exact year. When the tax shelters went away in the 80s, mm-hmm. people turned to life insurance in a huge, huge way, and in so much of a huge way that the government said, "Whoa, wait a minute, you guys are not just using it; you're abusing it. So we're going to enact laws that not eliminate that, but kind of put the brakes. You can only put so much." They were saying, look, this is an effective tax shelter, and we think you're abusing it. And what we'd like to do is have you continue to use it. It has social values. It has widows and orphans value from a death benefit standpoint. But from a money standpoint, we're going to put the brakes on a little bit and limit, in the first 7 years of a contract, how much money you can put in to one of these things to have it be useful but not abusive.
So you've seen that too, Jim?
Yes.
With life insurance?
Right.
So do you? How much work do you do in that area?
Well, it just depends. I mean, I think it comes and goes in waves. I mean, sometimes the life insurance and annuity business is really up. Other times it's the qualified plans are going strong. I mean, I know we're headed towards a break, but I mean, one of the most entertaining things is to watch, the politics of the situation where, you know, when like they start talking about taxing the internal accrual of benefit in a life insurance policy, and the life insurance industry hires every lobbyist they can find to stop that. So, you know, it's like the mortgage deduction, the real estate people do that too. So it's entertaining to watch it.
That is entertaining. Yeah. Maybe when we come back, we'll talk about the concept that I've been hearing about, is that they're going to let something fall off the cliff. You've heard of that, and yes, we'll talk about that, not politically, but just what does it all mean for the regular person? This is Breakthrough Thinking. We'll be right back.
FamilyValuesRadio.net.
1010 KXXT.
Coalition Phoenix.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602 625 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Hi, I'm Paul and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.